Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and I'm joined today by Mr. Martin van Staden. Martin, how are you doing?
Hey, good on you, Nicholas. It's been a while, but it's great to be back.
Always good to have you back on the show. And joining us for the first time today to talk a little bit also about his own podcast is Pilar Shongwe. Pilar, how are you doing? And welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. It's great to be here. I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm pretty good. So before we get into it, Pilar, you are going to be, I believe, joining the sort of Daily Friend collection of podcasts relatively soon. What can you tell us? Just you're going to be doing a show. We will be releasing something on this with more detail, but can tell us a little bit about it?
So it's wonderful to be here, as I said. And yes, I will be joining the group, as it were, the stable, if you will, with my own podcast show, which is in a way an extension of a show that I hosted for the past 2 years called the Nocturnal Unwrap podcast, hosted by the Novomentis, a non-profitable organization based in Stellenbosch. And it is essentially a free market, pro-liberal think tank, which champions, as I say, free market, more Austrian-leaning ideas. It's a wonderful pleasure to see Martin on the show as well. Now that I speak about Austrian economics, and I've obviously heard him speak about that quite a bit. So yeah, very, very excited. I've actually already recorded a few episodes. There's one that I think people can look forward to with Professor Johan Faurie from Stellenbosch University, who wrote a fantastic book called South Africa's Long Walk to Economic Freedom. So it's a in a nutshell, I think that podcast really summarizes what the essence of the podcast really is, which is about, well-researched content, but from a pro-market and pro-Austrian economic lens. So yeah, I don't want to give away too much, of course. We will talk about it in a bit more detail later, but yeah, that's what people can look forward to. There's a podcast to look forward to. I think it should be out before the end of the week. So yeah, people can definitely look forward to that.
Awesome stuff. Very, very good. And I look forward to listening to it and talking to you more about it in that other show you're talking about. Right.
Absolutely.
Just a couple of things. There was another tiger that appears to have escaped in Gauteng, but has been apparently recaptured. So that's another ominous sign. Apparently, Gauteng has a tiger infestation, but that's neither here nor there. The big news, I think, of last week is the fall of the coalition government in Johannesburg, which saw the ejection from the mayorship of Mpho Palatse. So there's of course this multi-party coalition that includes most notably the DA Action SA, as well as a lot of the other smaller parties, and they didn't have a majority in the Joburg City Council. They're required in order to have that majority, the Patriotic Alliance. The EFF and ANC appear to have, at least for now, buried some of their antagonism towards each other and sought to unite together to eject the DA mayor. The only way to prevent this from happening was to include the PA in that coalition agreement. There was a lot of fierce negotiating between the sides. The PA apparently wanted the economic development and roads agencies in Johannesburg to be brought under their control, which is what the ANC had offered them. But the DA said they were unwilling to give them these portfolios in no short terms, basically because they said they couldn't trust the PA not to turn these into patronage networks. Action SA, keen to have the coalition government continue, offered those positions to the PA and said in return they wanted the DA to give them, I think it was, the chair of chairs and the speakership of council. But I'm not sure if that's been confirmed, but that's what I've heard. The DA, according to some of the news reporting on this, was skeptical given the history of the PA's repeated betrayal of coalition governments, and set down two conditions for any negotiations. Firstly, the PA should not return with more mayoral committee positions than what they had left the coalition, and that they were seen not to benefit from their betrayal, as this would incentivize further extortion. In the end, the DA, I think, offered them the health portfolio and would instead give the economic development portfolio to, I think, the Freedom Front Plus. In the end, the Patriotic Alliance said, no, we're not going forward with this. We want those portfolios, and otherwise, we're going to back the ANC on this one. And so the DA government collapsed, or the coalition government collapsed, and Mpho Palatse is out, saying that she thought that this was really bad for the residents of Johannesburg and that the city was in good hands under her mayorship, and that she's sad that it ended like this. And in her place, the ANC, EFF, and a number of other smaller parties have elected Tapelo Ahmad from the Al Jamaha party, the Islamic party in Johannesburg. But what's quite interesting about this is the party only got 0.9% of the vote. What's even worse is that the ANC and EFF have said that Al Jamaha will only hold the mayorship until such a time as they can negotiate an agreement between themselves about which party is going to take over the mayorship of Johannesburg and what the division of positions will be. Martin, what do you make of this whole complicated, messy saga? Do you think the DA made the right move in rejecting the coalition, or do you think that this was a big mistake on their part?
Yeah, first, I guess, on the peculiarities of this this specific event, I think the DA was probably right here. And not because I'm a big DA supporter, but rather that, as you said, the DA didn't say, no, economic development is ours. Keep your hands off it. They were actually quite prepared to hand the portfolio to another coalition partner, the Freedom Front, which is in no way could you say that these are sister parties or anything. These are great opponents of each other. The Freedom Front Plus took, I think, something like 300,000 votes from the DA in the last general election. So these are bitter opponents. But the Democratic Alliance said, well, okay, you're our opponents, but you won't steal the money. We can't say the same thing about the Patriotic Alliance necessarily, given their history of association with, I think, convicted criminals. So I think the DA was quite reasonable here. They didn't say the PA gets nothing. I think they first offered them roads and transport back, which is what the PA had during the first coalition. And when the PA rejected this, I think the DA said, fine, then they can have health and community service, which is the Freedom Front's portfolio, and the Freedom Front can have economic development. So I think the DA did actually go quite a ways to make concessions here. They didn't simply say no on principle. On the other hand, to the more general point of coalitions, I'm not that despondent about this. I mean, sure, it's bad for the people of Johannesburg. But we need to remember that coalition politics in South Africa has never really been a big thing, and that's changing very quickly now. It's quite likely that we will only have coalition politics going forward. There will be no other type of politics. So everything will be based on compromise and inter-party agreements and so on. And this is something that many countries around the world have a lot of experience in, decades, if not centuries, of conventions and customs and understandings have been developed in their political culture between politicians. It's what they're bred in as they come up the political ladder. That's not the case here. So it's going to be a rough road to get to a point where coalition governments are stable and responsive and don't seem to be constantly infighting. We're going to get there. I'm sure we're going to get there. We don't really have a choice. But I think it's a mistake at this stage to see, okay, but look what happened in Joburg. Coalition politics is a dead end. We have to, I don't know, reform the electoral system entirely or anything like that. I think give it time. We are in a dire economic situation as a country. We don't, time isn't, to say give it time isn't necessarily going to sound too good. Things are getting worse. But this is the nature of politics. We have to allow conventions and customs to develop, and they will. And I think we have every reason to still be optimistic about next year, to see the ANC brought under 50 and hopefully its ragtag coalition also brought far under 50. And yes, we might have a somewhat unstable coalition government at national level thereafter, but I think still that's preferable to having a guaranteed a coalition of tyranny with the ANC and the EFF. So I'm still quite optimistic about coalition politics.
So I must say that, you know, I've always thought that the DA going into government in Johannesburg this time was a terrible idea. And I thought that this is pretty much the same for most of their coalition partners as well, that no party in that coalition is really going to come out of this without some egg on their face. I'm a resident of Joburg. I don't think the city has been doing well under the coalition government. From my perspective, I've talked to some councillors who are part of the coalition government. They believe that they had made some progress in some areas, especially billing and some parts of city power. But broadly speaking, I don't think that it was a particularly successful venture because they just lacked the political stability. and that they should have gone into opposition. So firstly, Pilar, two questions to you. The first one is, do you agree with Martin's assessment? And the second one is, do you think that this, that being out of government might actually be good for some of the coalition partners, because they can go back to the comfortable position of pointing out the mistakes that the ANC and their EFF partners might be creating?
Yeah, so I mean, I agree largely with what Martin has said, but I think I do not share his optimism. You know, when I look at some of the stories of, you know, some of the coalitions that have failed over the past few months and years, I don't think that bodes well for 2024, especially with it being so recent or so close in the future. And I think a lot of South Africans are starting to sense that fragility in our political system. And I think the trust that we, and I mean, as I said, I agree largely with what you say, but I just don't think we have the time to, as it were, see this out and to weather the storm, if you will, because, you know, the elections are so soon. And I think just from the ordinary South African looking in, this does not really, you know, bode well. It does not tell a good story about the kind of leadership that, you know, South Africa needs in order to claw ourselves out of the abyss in which we presently find ourselves in. I obviously agree that, you know, a coalition among, you know, various political parties is a much better alternative than having, you know, the guaranteed tyranny of the ANC, as you so wonderfully put it. But I'm not too sure it's going to bode as well, given, you know, just the history of coalitions. And I think the other important point that you touched upon that I wish to merely just graze over is that you said it's an issue that, you know, particularly Joburg residents are obviously worried about. I think it transcends that. I think it's an issue that, you know, all South Africans are worried about, and all South Africans are obviously looking at, you know, given you know, the makeup, as it were, of the government, you know, from the next election going forward. And as I say, I don't think I share the optimism, but that may be just from, you know, a parochial view of, you know, just the failures that we've seen. But, you know, I'm obviously happy to have my mind changed. But yeah, I just think, you know, as things stand, you know, it doesn't really tell the kind of story that we wish to tell heading into, you know, 2024, such a crucial election as, you know, we all can expect. I also think, you know, just given the backdrop of the South African landscape, you know, we're on a precipice, on the edge of a precipice, as it were. And I think the least of our worries should be instability in our leadership. And I just think that, you know, instability might be a catalyst for us tipping over that precipice. And I'm not sure that that's really desirable.
So I think I probably come down on the more optimistic side of this. But Martin, you talked about the guaranteed tyranny of the ANC-EFF coalition. I think there's definitely, you know, that's definitely the desire of such a coalition as that. But I'm beginning to wonder now, considering how fractious and tortured our politics is at this point, how the EFF and ANC will actually be together in government. And I suspect that the truth is, no matter who wins the next election, as long as it's a coalition required to run the government, it's going to be unstable. Whether it's an EFF-ANC coalition, whether it's a DA, Action SA, IFP, ACDP, whatever coalition, it's going to be really messy. So I suspect that everyone should buckle in, because there's not going to be any slowdown. Martin, any final thoughts?
Yeah, no, if I can just add, I think that bodes well. Now, I know not everyone who listens to this podcast is a libertarian like I am, but the idea that the two worst forces, morally and maybe even legally, in South Africa, being the ANC and the EFF, will simply not be able to get along in government, that's good news. That's very good news. We've seen the first fruits of that with the failure of the constitutional amendment to bring about expropriation without compensation in November of 2021. That was simply because the EFF and the ANC didn't agree about some small details of the amendment. Now, in the future, maybe they disagree about expanding interference in labor rights, and they don't get to vote on laws like that, and they don't impose that on the rest of us. Yes, it's unstable. We might have a DA president for 4 months, and then we might have an ANC president for 6 months, and then we might have an EFF compromise candidate president for 2 months. That might happen, yes, and it's not going to be great for the international markets and investors who look at what's going on in South Africa. But I think that as a matter of putting the brake on absolutely atrocious policies being thought up feverishly by people like Rob Davies and Ibrahim Patel and just being implemented because the ANC has that majority, I'm quite happy that that might be coming to an end, that everything will now need to be a negotiation and a compromise. But just, I think my final thought on this is that the leaders of the parties that are not in that coalition of evil, Action SA, the DA, the Freedom Front, IFP, it's time to grow up. As Pilot put it, we're on a precipice. It's not going well. Yet these people still find time to engage in infighting. I've been watching the Action SA DA spat on Twitter as an observer for a while, and I mean it's getting ridiculous now. I think one party is worse than the other, but I think that the other party could be the bigger man and just say, okay, listen, clearly we've offended you. What can we do? Just tell us what can we do to make it stop. Maybe a few people need to be fired in both parties. I don't know. But at some point, there needs to be a united front of these opposition groupings saying, okay, we're now going to stand together on this against this terrible future that the ANC and the EFF pose to us. So I'm hoping that could happen, if not now, at least sometime before the 2024 election.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because there's another development with regards to coalitions that we've seen on this front. And that is, last year we covered on this show an attempt by the EFF to sort of woo the IFP into coalition agreements with them. It was in a much announced, you know, Malema holds these press conferences where every single utterance he says is reported on. And he said, you know, we're going to meet with the IFP. We're going to like discuss all these issues and maybe we can figure out some ways to come together in government in a whole bunch of places. Evidently, that didn't go well, because the EFF, another press conference that Malema had on Sunday, has said that the EFF would initiate and support motions of no confidence in all IFP mayors in the municipalities in which they had previously voted with them. There's a whole bunch, most of them in KZN, of course. He also went on to say, we have communicated this with the leadership of the IFP and have instructed EFF deputy mayors to resign and remain as ordinary councillors, and that they would make every effort to ensure that the IFP was removed from all positions of responsibility in all municipalities, in all Gauteng municipalities, rather. Malema did say, though, that he was maybe willing to reopen negotiations with the IFP, but said that, quote, they have a history of collaborating with apartheid collaborators. Pila, what do you make of the EFF's divorce here? It really seems like the EFF is kind of putting all of its eggs in the sort of making a deal with the ANC basket now.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating that they call the IFP, or that they say of the IFP that they're involved with apartheid collaborators, seeing as they themselves did not entirely shut the door, out of the way for potential collaboration with the IFP. So I think that's pretty interesting. But again, I mean, I think all of this is quite petty, and I think it's I think it's symptomatic of what's going on in South African politics. I mean, we spoke just before this about the Johannesburg mess. I think we're seeing it everywhere in the country, and that I think really should be the telltale signs that this is potentially very dangerous. And this is a point that I wanted to try and get across just in response to Martin's point, which is that, I mean, I think if we had the time, you know, I think if we realized that we had the time and everybody on the ground knew that, we could, I think, be more apathetic, as it were, to the situation as it currently plays out. But I think it's the lack of the time that's, you know, standing feverishly in front of us, and that obviously needs to be confronted. And I think this EFF-IFP spat is just one example of what could potentially go wrong. It's a clash of egos. And I think that that's going to be the case for as long as, we're still in talks of coalition politics. And I'm obviously not against coalition politics. I think it's a wonderful idea, but I just don't think we currently have the time. And maybe just in response to the question that you asked before this one, Nicholas, I don't think that we should go back to how things were. I think it's good that we're moving forward and that things are slowly starting to change. And maybe these are the reverberations of that change. But I don't know. I just can't shake off the fact that this is all quite petty, and especially at such a critical point. Hopefully things will improve as the year progresses. Hopefully the EFF and the IFP and the ANC and the DA and the PA and everybody else involved will be able to put their pride aside and realize that this is for the greater good, as they all claim that this is, and realize that that we actually need, you know, a united front, which I suppose is a bit of a paradox considering coalition politics and, you know, the ideological spats among the different political parties. But yeah, I mean, I just walk away from this thinking that there's so much pettiness and there's so much egos that are at stake that really need to be done away with if we are to at all get ourselves out of the mess that we're in.
Martin, you were very happy when you heard this news, because I know that you were a little bit worried about, I mean, if we look at the history of the IFP in the last sort of 10 years or so, they've kind of been all over the place, you know, trying to draw a straight line about like what the IFP was going to do on any one policy issue. Suddenly they were in favor of expropriation without compensation, but then they weren't in favor of it. But then they voted with the government this time, but then they voted with the opposition this time. They supported an ANC coalition government. They supported a DA coalition government. They sort of, you never really know entirely what you're going to get from the IFP, but it seems here, at least as if they told the EFF to go away when the EFF offered to make a deal with them. What do you make of this?
Yeah, look, the IFP, if we're going to have a coalition government in South Africa that does not include the ANC or the EFF or maybe one of these ragtag associates of them, we're going to need the IFP. There is no two ways about it. So I'm quite excited when I see the IFP moving away from the ANC EFF house, as it were, because that means inevitably that it's getting closer to the opposition front that we desperately need. So yeah, I mean, you're right. The IFP used to be one of the most principled anti-apartheid organizations in South Africa, held a very principled stand on federalism, on a decentralization of powers, also very strong on a free market, on economic freedom and on civil liberties throughout the 80s and the 90s. The IFP was very, very strong on that. And then into our new democracy, they remained strong. MPs like Mario Oriani Ambrosini, he was a libertarian. He described himself as such, and he walked the talk. So the IFP has a very proud tradition of standing up for the right things, the things that make for the success of a society. So it's been very worrying that the IFP has engaged in toenadering with the ANC and the EFF. The EFF rapprochement was very concerning to me. So I'm very happy when there's a falling out between them, because we need the IFP very firmly in the opposition coalition, in the opposition front, if we're hoping to get something in government in 2024 or in 2029 that does not include the ANC or the EFF. So it's very necessary for us to see the split. Maybe we're going to lose a few IFP municipalities now. That would be a shame. But if it means the IFP is firmly in the correct corner in 2024, then that's a sacrifice I think we should be willing to make.
Definitely something to watch. And I think the other main thing to watch is now, so the ANC EFF have now put up this Ultramaha candidate in Joburg, and presumably they will help ANC mayors across KZN. But the real question is, seems to be no agreement still between the ANC and EFF. So let's watch. I think they said they need 6 months to figure out one. We'll see. And I think that's going to tell us a lot about the future of South Africa based off of how that agreement goes in Joburg and Ekurhuleni. Just one last thing to mention in Ekurhuleni is the DA seems to be holding on. They also look to be voted out in Ekurhuleni, but they seem to be holding on through a court action, which has given an interdict against the Ekurhuleni council sitting that was about to eject the DA mayor there. So that's kind of interesting. All right. So now that we've talked a lot about coalitions, let's just quickly talk about something else. And this is a thing that has always kind of fascinated me. So some of you may know the country of Malaysia has had some economic growth, quite good economic growth over the last few years, but there, it still remains a society with a lot of problems. One of the issues the society has been burdened with, or that's caused a lot of social friction, is that the Indian and Chinese minorities within Malaysia have traditionally, despite being a relatively small percentage of the population, done really well in the economic issues. They tend to hold disproportionately high numbers of positions in universities or businesses or that kind of thing. And as a result, 50 years ago, Malaysia implemented affirmative action policies, not quite BEE, but more like maybe MEE, to help the Malay population gain economic parity. This is as part of its new economic program. and then was continued into its national development policy. So it's had a fair number of race-based laws. And yet, 50 years later, the results are difficult to find. Indian and Chinese entrepreneurs still have a much bigger sway in the economy, despite years and years and years of racial laws. Some economists, that a development bank economist, has said that the affirmative action programs failed its focus group while marginalizing everyone else in the process. Rather than increasing social cohesion, it contributed to disunity. And as a result, Malaysia's skilled labor and capital have tended to migrate overseas, compounding the costs of affirmative action. Thomas Sowell, who is, of course, I'm sure, a fan of pretty much everyone on this podcast is a fan of, the American economist, said that the policies have really been counterproductive and hurt Malaysia's opportunities for growth, which may have been even greater than they have been. Martin, what lessons do you think we can take from Malaysia?
Look, I think we see this anywhere it's tried, where policies of this nature are tried, and that is that you might be able to uplift a minority with affirmative action measures. People in South Africa always say, but the apartheid government empowered Afrikaners and English South Africans, white English South Africans. So why can't the ANC government do the same for black South Africans? I think it's quite clear that you can do it for a minority. You can provide a basic floor of welfare, no matter how inefficient or wealth destructive that might be. It's something you might be able to pull off, but you're not going to raise the majority of society out of poverty and really empower them as families and as individuals and as communities to become independent participants in the economy rather than appendages of a government nanny state. You're not going to achieve that. That's not going to happen. If you want to bring the vast majority of people out of poverty, you need to look at what has worked and without exception has worked. And that is policies that give autonomy to firms, to communities, to individuals, to families, to pursue their own economic destinies and desires and affairs, and to get out of the way. People, when left to it, are able to provide for themselves. And much of South Africa's poverty today is clearly a direct result of government standing squarely in the way, especially when it comes to employment. Government stands in the way of people getting jobs and empowering themselves. And I mean, Malaysia just shows us that this is true there as well. You cannot empower the majority population by trying to redistribute the few positions and the little resources that a minority has. It's not going to work. It's never worked. And South Africa should heed that. But unfortunately, I fear it won't, because I think it's quite intentional. If you read the work by our colleague Anthea Jeffrey on the National Democratic Revolution, you'll find quite quickly that what the government, the ANC and the EFF to an extent, want is a dependent population and a sluggish economy that is easier to take control of. So I don't think we're going to see the light, but that's up to voters. That's up to voters. Voters need to understand that redistribution is not going to help the vast majority of people, never has, never will, and they need to vote for pro-economic freedom policies that just get government out of the way.
You know, considering that Malaysia is one of the few places in the world that South Africa can look to when trying to work out, you know, what our BEE, whether it's effective or not, why do you think it hasn't entered into our public conversation at all? I mean, Martin's explained perhaps why some of our politicians are not keen on talking about this as an example, but why do you think our sort of public discourse has been blind to it?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's because South African problems require South African solutions, as we keep getting told. And what, of course, that means is that we shield ourselves to the lessons from other parts of the world, which is obviously quite idiotic in our case. There's a great deal to learn, not only from Malaysia, but from other countries as well. There's a wonderful article that was written by Gwen Gwenya. I can't quite remember when it was. And one of the standout sentences in that article was, it's not that the ANC cannot do Black economic empowerment, it's that Black economic empowerment simply does not work. And I thought that was a very interesting statement. And we obviously see, evidence of a statement like that everywhere in the world. And the other thing is, I don't quite think South Africans quite realize just how similar the South African and Malaysian case studies are. And I think it's only when people are made aware of the similarities between the two situations that they maybe can start taking the situation a bit more seriously. Because just sitting here and saying, you know, Malaysia, is trying to scrap, or they realize that their affirmative action policies are simply not working and indeed are yielding adverse consequences. And it doesn't mean that much to the ordinary person listening to that. But I think the minute you start, peeling away at it, when you realize that actually they're trying to, in the same way we are, benefit the majority of the population who have for the longest time been oppressed, and obviously that's true. But the lesson from there is obviously that, you know, it's not going to work because of affirmative action. And I think the reason South Africans are clinging to BEE is we're willing to shield ourselves from other parts of the world because we obviously want to be our own unique basket case, which is obviously quite idiotic and is not going to work. And secondly, you know, we don't realize just how similar, other countries' experiences are, and that we can learn from them if we are only willing to do so. And Thomas Sowell is a wonderful, wonderful author in this regard. And if only more people read him, if only.
Indeed. And from your lips to God's ears. Anyway, with that, that's all the time we have for on the show today. So thank you very much, everyone. I hope that you have a wonderful week, and we will see you tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone.